38. Be unfaithful to me. A battered truck bounced over the bared roots of pine trees and snarled its way through the sand drifts, carrying Nadia home from the battle zone. Cleb watched the forest track grow longer, darker, narrower behind the truck, and swallow it. Who could have told them that the end of the war would not be the end, but the beginning of their separation? Waiting for a husband to come home from the war is always hard, and hardest of all in its last few months. Shrapnel and stray bullets do not ask how much fighting a man has seen. That was when Gleb stopped writing. Nadia would run out to look for the mailman. She wrote to her husband, wrote to her friends, wrote to his commanding officers. There seemed to be a conspiracy of silence. But she received no notification of burial. In the spring of 45, triumphant salvos every evening hailed the capture of city after city. Königsberg, Breslau, Frankfurt, Berlin, Prague. But no letter came. The world grew dark. She had no wish to do anything. But she could not let herself go. If he was alive, and if he came back, he would reproach her for wasting her time. So she spent her days working for a higher degree in chemistry, studying foreign languages and dialectical materialism, and wept only at night. Suddenly, the Ministry of Defense stopped paying her allowance as an officer's wife. That could only mean that he had been killed. The 4-year war ended immediately afterward. People crazed with joy ran through the delirious streets. Pistols were fired into the air. Every loudspeaker in the Soviet Union blared out victory marches over the battle-scarred and famished country. Nadia was notified not that he was dead, but that he was missing. Ever eager to arrest people, the state had always shied away from admitting it. The human heart does not easily reconcile itself to the irremediable, and Nadia found herself indulging in comforting fantasies. Perhaps he had been sent to reconnoiter deep in enemy terrain. Could he be carrying out some special mission? A generation brought up to be suspicious and secretive could imagine mysteries where there were none. There was a heat wave in southern Russia that summer, but the sun did not shine on the young widow. Still, she went on studying chemistry, languages, and dialectical materialism, Diamat, for fear of disappointing him when he returned. 4 months after the war ended, it was surely time for her to accept that Gleb was no longer living. But that was when the crumpled triangle of paper arrived from Krasnaya Presnya. My only love! It's going to be another 10 years! Her family and friends could not understand her. She learns that her husband is in jail, and all at once she's bright and cheerful. How lucky that it wasn't 25 years, or even 15! It is only from the grave that people never return. From prison they do. There was even something romantic about their plight. A commonplace student marriage had become something noble, something sublime. Nadia no longer needed to fear that he was dead, or that his feelings had treacherously changed, and she felt a new uprush of strength. He was in Moscow, so she must go to Moscow to save him. Her presence at his side would be enough to save him, or so she thought. But how could she get there? Posterity will never be able to imagine how difficult travel, and especially traveling to Moscow, was in those days. As in the 30s, a citizen had to produce documentary proof that official duties compelled him to become a burden on public transportation rather than sitting quietly at home. If he succeeded, he was given a docket entitling him to hang about in lines at railway stations, sleeping right there on a spittle-splashed floor, or else to slip someone a timid bribe at the back door of the booking office. Nadia's excuse was that she intended to study for a higher degree in Moscow. She bought a ticket at 3 times face value and hurried to Moscow with a briefcase full of textbooks on her lap, together with a pair of felt boots for a husband whom the tiger awaited. It was one of those supreme moments in life when good powers help us and we succeed in all we undertake. The country's finest graduate school accepted an unknown provincial girl with no money or connections or even a telephone number to her name. It was a miracle, but getting to see her husband in Krasnaya Presnya transit prison proved harder. No visits were allowed, while the channels of the Gulag were choked by the incredible spate of prisoners from Europe. But as she was standing by the timbered guardhouse, waiting for an answer to yet another futile application, Nadia saw a column of prisoners marched through the unpainted wooden gates of the prison to work on the docks of the Moscow River. One of those flashes of insight that prove so often accurate told Nadia that Gleb was among them. 200 men were marched out. They were all at that transitional stage when a man is gradually shedding his free clothing and assuming the slovenly dark grey costume of the Zek. Every one of them still had about him some memento of his past, a soldier's peaked cap with a coloured band but without strap or star, or else calfskin boots not yet traded for bread or appropriated by the professional criminals, a silk shirt split down the back. They were all close-cropped. Some of them tried to shield their heads from the summer sun, all unshaved, all thin, some to the point of emaciation. Nadia had no eyes for the rest of them. She sensed where Gleb was and spotted him immediately. He was walking along in his worsted tunic. Its collar was unbuttoned, the red piping was still there on his cuffs, and an unfaded strip on his chest showed where his medal ribbons had once been. He kept his hands behind his back, as they all did. He did not look, as they went downhill, at the sunlit spaces that you would expect to attract a prisoner, nor sideways at the women with parcels. No letters reached prisoners in transit, and he could not know that Nadia was in Moscow. He was just as yellow, just as emaciated as his comrades, but he was beaming as he listened with delighted approval to the dignified, grey-bearded old man beside him. Nadia ran alongside and called his name, but he could not hear her above the buzz of conversation and the frantic barking of the guard dogs. She ran on, gasping for breath, greedily drinking in the sight of him. How sorry she felt for him, rotting away month after month in dark, stinking cells. What happiness it was to see him so near to her! How proud she was that his spirit was not broken! And how vexed that he was evidently not grieving, that he had forgotten his wife! And suddenly her pain was all for herself, as though he had robbed her of happiness, as though she, not he, were the victim. But it was all over in a moment. A guard yelled at her. The dogs, red-eyed man-eaters, trained to terrify, strained at their leashes, barking and glaring. Nadia was driven away. The column filed down a narrow slope, and there was no room to squeeze in alongside. The last of the guards hung back to seal off the forbidden area, and Nadia, following behind, had no hope of overtaking the column, which disappeared from sight behind another blank fence. In the evening and at night, when the inhabitants of Krasnaya Presnya, a district of Moscow famous for its fight for freedom, could not see them, special trains made up of cattle trucks pulled in at the transit prison. Parties of convoy guards with unsteady lamps, raucously barking dogs, peremptory shouts, curses and blows, loaded prisoners 40 to a truck and shipped them by the thousand to Pechora, Inta, Vorkucha, Sovgavin, Narilsk, to the camps of Irkutsk, Chita, Krasnoyarsk, Novosibirsk, Central Asia, Karaganda, Jezkazgan, Pribalkhash, the Irtysh, Tobolsk, the Urals, Saratov, Vyatka, Vologda, Perm, Solvichegodsk, Rybinsk, Potma, Sukhobyezvodninsk, and many nameless smaller camps. Groups of 100 or 2 were carried off by day in the backs of trucks to Serebryny Bor, to Novi Yerusalim, to Pavshina, to Chovrina, to Beskudnikova, to Khimki, to Dmitrov, to Salnechnogorsk, or by night to various places in Moscow itself, so that, hidden from view by blank billboards and safe behind barbed wire entanglements, they could build a capital befitting an invincible great power. Fate sent Nadia an unexpected but well-deserved reward. As luck would have it, Gleb was not packed off to the Arctic Circle, but dumped in Moscow itself, in an elegant prison camp engaged in building accommodations for the senior staff of the Ministries of State Security and the Interior, a crescent-shaped building at the Kaluga Gate. When Nadia hurried there to visit him for the first time, she felt as though he were halfway to freedom already. Elegant cars, some with diplomatic license plates, drove up and down Great Kalujskaya Street. Buses and trolleys stopped where the railings around Neskuchny Park ended, and there was the guardhouse, looking like the shack at the entrance to any ordinary building site. The people swarming high up on the face of the new building wore torn and dirty clothes, but builders always looked like that, and passers-by never guessed that these were prisoners, or if they did, they kept quiet about it. Those were the days of cheap money and expensive bread. Things were sold at home, and Nadia handed in parcels for her husband. The parcels were always accepted, but permission to see him was rarely granted. Gleb was not fulfilling his quota of work. When she did see him, she hardly recognized him. Adversity always changes arrogant people for the better. Gleb was gentler. He kissed his wife's hands. He watched the changing light in her eyes. He felt as though he were no longer in prison. Camp life, which surpasses in savagery all that we know about the lives of cannibals or rats, had almost broken him. But he had, by conscious effort, risen above self-pity, and now he struggled to make her see reason. "My dearest, you don't know what you are letting yourself in for. You will wait for a year, maybe 3 years, 5 years even, but the nearer the end, the harder waiting will become. The last few years will be the hardest. We have no children, so don't ruin your young life. Give me up. Marry somebody else." He did not altogether mean what he was saying, but he had to make the offer. And she protested without really meaning what she was saying. "Are you looking for an excuse to get rid of me?" The prisoners lived in an unfinished wing of the house they were building. The women who brought them parcels could look over the fence as they got off the trolleys and see the faces of men crowding around two or three windows. Sometimes they could see love girls among them. One love girl, standing at the window, embraced her camp husband, and shouted over the fence at his lawful wife, "Why don't you stop chasing him, you slut? Hand the parcel over, make it the last, and get lost. If I see you at the guardhouse again, I'll scratch your ugly mug to bits." The first post-war elections to the Supreme Soviet were approaching. Moscow prepared for them zealously, as if it were really possible for a voter to abstain or a candidate to fail. The authorities wanted to keep the politicals in Moscow. They were good workers, but had qualms. Vigilance could be blunted. To give the rest a scare, some of them must be sent away. Alarming rumours of imminent transfer to the far north went round the Moscow camps. Prisoners who had potatoes baked them to eat on the journey. So that nothing could dampen the enthusiasm of the electorate, visits to prisoners in Moscow camps were prohibited pending the elections. Nadia took along a towel for Gleb with a note stitched into it. "My beloved, however many years go by, whatever storms may gather over our heads," Nadia affected a high-flown style, "your little girl will be true to you as long as she lives. They say that your category is to be sent out of Moscow. You will be in distant places, cut off from any chance of a visit, or even an exchange of stolen glances across the wires. If in that life of unrelieved gloom any distraction can lighten the burden on your heart, I shall resign myself. I authorize you, indeed I insist on it. Be unfaithful to me. Take up with other women. Do whatever you must to keep your spirits up. I am not afraid. I know that whatever happens, you will come back to me, won't you?"